F1, number 3B.
Now, since then, naturally, we have gone forward, and I wouldn't like to do the same what he has done, because I think I have another duty now. So I don't intend now to go through these 12 minor prophets just with the purpose of showing, yes, the other six which he hasn't taken have also structure, and that we have seen it, and that it is this and that. Well, I have to do that, but that's not very interesting anymore so much at that time. It's still wonderful to see it. But we are so used that the biblical writers have been scientific writers. So my thought was trying to reach in a more, in a way which would relate much more the prophets to each other. And therefore, I will not try somehow to give you a verse-by-verse interpretation of these prophets. I sent you the layout of them. I don't know if you agree with it or not. It doesn't really matter. Perhaps when we talk about it, you will see why I have had this structure. But then, what I want to do is something different. You see, what's the use, say, of knowing that Hosea is written in the word order? Well, that's wonderful to know it's a structure in it, and that you have that there is order in it. But what's the use of it to know that? Especially when you go to the second and say you find out that they are also written in the word order. Or to the third, to Amos, and you find it's also written about the word order. You go on and perhaps you find that each one is written in the same order, and slowly you may think, well, it's a bit, it's not so interesting to always to find this world order. Well, there I want to pick up the subject. If Hosea writes a story in the world order, and the second one, Joel, writes it in the word order, same. And the third one, Amos, writes it in the word order. I ask myself, why are they writing always the same thing? Or, now comes the point, or, are they bringing out something very different and just use the word order to explain it? Or you can ask yourself, if Hosea has written in the word order, and Joel comes and writes in the word order, what is the difference between them, and hasn't Hosea told the whole story? Has it been necessary to have 16 prophets? Wouldn't it have been enough with Isaiah? Or with Jeremiah? Why 16? And so, thought begins to blend over from the focus of interest changes from the structure of the world order and says yes, it changes over to the 16. It changes over from the 7 to the 16, you see. So that suddenly that which becomes more interesting than to see a prophet in the 7, it becomes more interesting to see a prophet in its place and in its message within the matrix. And that's what I want to do next week. I want to take the 7 because I have to take the 7 to prove my standpoint, but much more what we'll do is to see the difference of message of prophet to prophet. Always with the thought that the Bible wouldn't have canonized one of these prophets if he would say the same thing what another had already said, because they didn't have enough paper to do that. They didn't want to talk too broadly about the thing which they could do in a more economical way. So the thought comes that that which Hosea says cannot be the whole of the whole question of the prophetic age. Therefore, it will show that each prophet sets a new stone to the whole building of this prophetic era, and that only the whole together is a whole, is one. That only the 16 prophets together, forming the matrix, really define the whole method of translation, of the whole method of the first and second translation. So, if I may say so, you see, we will see that as we go on, that each prophet will show another aspect of the whole translation. And as we go on, putting one after the other and building them together, we'll find the whole house under this big roof, which is called the Christ translation. Every one of these prophets, everyone, will show an aspect of both translations. Because as we have seen, the first translation cannot be without the second, and the second does not make sense without the first. But Mrs. Eddy presented it in a nutshell, whereas the prophets have seen or have presented it in its full detail. Its full detail. By giving that whole Christ translation as a whole matrix. In other words, I don't know what you say about it. What we'll find is the Christ matrix. We'll not find just any matrix. We'll find the matrix under that big roof or under that big umbrella called the Christ. The Christ goes through everyone, the Christ message, you see, goes through every one of these 16 prophets. So the common denominator of all the 16 will always be the Christ translation. But in order to show us the working of this Christ translation, in order to show to us, to the Lord in us, what really is the Christ translation, this principle can only show us through all its aspects, and they are 16. So, is that very foreign to your thought? But perhaps up to now we have just spoken of a matrix, 4 times 4, the word Christ, Christian, Word Christ, Christianity and Science reflected in Word Christ, Christianity and Science. But little by little we begin, it was forced on us to see that we must think not only of one matrix, but of many matrices. Now, we can ask ourselves, all right, if this matrix appears and reappears, well, then they must say something new each time. They can't say the same thing. Each time the matrix must mean something new. It means always fundamentally the same, namely the four times four. But in its message, in its application, in its import, it must mean something new. Well, you see, in that way, thought has led us to see, or at least to enlarge our thought and see, well, let's think of a matrix not only as a one matrix, but as many matrices. Now, you know, I don't know how much you have been aware of that, but perhaps for many years you have been doing that unconsciously. That in handling a problem or giving a treatment, you may have, in that very instance, perhaps gone through the whole matrix without knowing it. Which means that really every idea has a matrix. Because there is nothing in being which is one that can be split away. So if the whole being is fundamentally, can fundamentally be symbolized through the 64 square as the 4, reflecting the 4 as the 16, then in principle we know that principle translates itself always to the form of idea. Therefore, the principle of the matrix always translates itself into the matrices of every idea. I just can't imagine an idea being operative, an idea healing a situation without having in itself the whole impact of a matrix. Because every idea is a fact of the world. Every idea has a Christ in itself and has the power to do something. And every idea establishes itself, it has a Christianity sense, and every idea is there to operate in its principle. It can never operate outside of its principle. So it has the 4 in itself. So, let's see, you see, that really, fundamentally, we could today say and prove it and state it very easily, that the matrix of immortality, which in its fundamental sense John Dolley has given us, that this matrix of immortality shows and presents itself either as a matrix, say, of mind, or the matrix of spirit, or the matrix of soul, or of principle, or of life, or of truth, or of love. In practice, I think this is something which one goes over consciously or unconsciously very, very often. But if you pinpoint the problem and say, well, that has to do with mind, well, you begin perhaps with the world sense of mind, and afterwards with the Christ sense of mind, afterwards with the Christianity sense of mind, and afterwards perhaps with the science sense of mind. And you already have put it into the 4, you see. So there is nothing far-fetched, really, if we begin to broaden out our thought and see that we could easily speak of the mind matrix, or of the spirit matrix, or of the soul matrix, or principle matrix, or life matrix, or truth matrix, or love matrix. But also, and I'll come to the prophets back, also we could speak of the world matrix, or of the Christ matrix, or of the Christianity matrix, or of the science matrix. And as a matter of fact, these last three have been in my thought, and they are the most clearest in my thought. Namely, that the prophets, the 16 prophets, give a wonderful exposition of the Christ matrix. The 16 prophets are 16 standpoints of the Christ. They all, the prophets, they have one roof, one common denominator, which is the Christ, see, which stands over all and circles them all. In each one you can pinpoint the Christ message and the Christ translation. But within that, or beneath that roof of the Christ, I could call it the roof category, you see, the Christ. The Christ which stands over all the 16 rooms of that house as a roof, and that roof category is the Christ. But within that house are many mansions. There is not only one flat in it, it's not a one-story house, it's a four-story houses. It has 4 different stories, the world, the Christ, Christianity and science. So, where was I? Yes, with the roof and the men. See, we could look at it like a house with a roof, you see, and say, well, the roof is the main category, is the Christ. Then in that house there are many mansions. There are it's a four-story house. You could say the one story is the Word, you see, and the second the Christ, and third Christianity, and fourth science. But in each story there is a flat with four rooms. With four rooms. So you get four times four rooms in that house. But it's always under the same roof. So each room in that house, if I can say so, each of these 16 rooms is always protected by the roof, by the Christ. It's always, has always its specific place and is defined by the Christ. But always with a shade different. With a little shade different. And now we want to take this little chart and see what I mean with it. And don't be worried at all about it. You know, always at the beginning when one shows something new, one gets a bit, perhaps a bit uneasy about it and thinks, oh, that's difficult and I will never understand it. It's so easy at the next Sunday. It's a bit difficult this Sunday, but next Sunday it will be very easy. Very easy. That's why we are here for, and you will see it's so natural. It's so easy. It's the most natural thing what will happen. See, I tried to put the whole thing under the title, The Christ, which means that each of these 16 can only be considered from the Christ point of view. Then I have given you a little matrix in it, but instead of writing just on the top and on the side, Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, see, as we usually do when we write down a matrix, instead of saying that, I have put that in brackets, tried to put it a bit behind, and have tried to give, I must say, tried, I don't know if I have succeeded, tried to pinpoint the specific idea each time of the Word, the Christ, Christianity and science. You know that the Word can mean many things. Just as we have mind, well, mind can be mean many things. Mind can mean creator, intelligence, or the law, or control, or the producer, and so on. It can be symbolized according to the context, according to the necessity, through different ideas. And the same is true with Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. We can, you know how many definitions there are in the textbook about the Christ. There is not just one, there are many definitions about the Christ. And so it is with the Word, and with Christianity, and with science. It can mean many things. But just as when we use the synonyms, we use them specifically. We use the specific ideas. And so, also, say, if we have four matrices, the Word matrix, the Christ matrix, the Christianity matrix, and the Science matrix, in each of these matrices, the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science must mean slightly something different. Or they are not different. See, just as mind means something different than spirit, though they refer to God. Just as spirit means something different than soul, though they refer to one God. So, also here we must see that the Word, Christ, Christianity and science not always have the same stress each time the matrix appears. And in this lies the wonder of it, you know. I have done up to now the prophets, and I have done the epistles, I have done the textbook. And each time, you know, there are 16. The prophets are 16 in a matrix, under the roof of the Christ, whereas the epistles are 16, but under the roof of Christianity and not the Christ. And the chapters in the textbook are 16, but under the roof of science. And when I tried to see what the message was of the prophets and epistles and the textbook, I could see that each time a different tone or a different shading of the world and Christ and Christianity and science is stressed. They must, or they are the same. They would have to write the same thing in the epistles as in the prophets. Is that clear? If it isn't clear, just tell me, because to start with, we must, well, at least be 50% clear. The other 50 we do next week. Now, look here, what has been written down here is not the beginning of my study. It's the very end of it. I wrote it down about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It took me 2 years, and I weighed it, and I weighed it, and I weighed it, and I weighed it, until I felt I could reduce the message of the prophets to fundamental coordinates. You know what coordinates are? You know, you have in geometry 2 coordinates, like this, you see. And every time you have a point of intersection, what you call it, you see, then you can pinpoint something very definite. Now, that's what the matrix does, you see. So, I was wondering all the time. The first thing I could see, because Gordon Brown brought it up for the first time, was quite evident when I look at the 12 prophets that the first 3 prophets formed a group of its own. I called it a triad. I call it a triad, huh? When you have a group of 3. Call it a triad. Yeah, triad, huh? A triad. See, I could see that Hosea, Joel, and Amos, which you have in the first column down, that they have something which they have in common. And I would call it the monopotency of God good. I put that as the one, you see, on the top. One. I called the word there as the monopotency of God. Now, I know that the dictionary doesn't have that word, monopotency. I'm very proud about this word, I coined it myself. Because the tone I felt in those 3, you see, the tone I felt in those 3, I could best express with this new word. I felt these first 3, you see, that they would all show that God's power is the only power, and that that power would be good. See, it wasn't just omnipotence. It wasn't just omnipotence. It was because it was under the roof of Christ. Of the roof of Christ which says, you know, the power of God is the only power and is good. So I tried to formulate it as the monopotency of God good. Then I felt that in the third triad, Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah, that they all had one common denominator, and that was the reformatory power of the Christ. I felt that they focus, have a main focus that they show the Christ roof. See, the Christ roof in this second story as a reform, as a reformatory power. That the Christ is the Savior and wants to reform. So I, you see, put there the reformatory power of Christ. Then in the third triad, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, there I felt that the common denominator, which is common for the three together, is what I tried to epitomize as the restoration of the idea. There you have a sense that the idea is always intact and that it only needs to be freed from that which tries to hide it. And so that the Christ there has the office to take away the veil that tries to hide the already perfect idea of God. So I called it the restoration of the idea. And the last triad, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, they all talk about the operation of the idea in its principle, how to build a temple, what the temple is, how to serve in the temple. It's all about the idea operating in its principle. So, you see, I tried, instead of just telling to you always, well, that's the word, and that's the Christianity as Christ, and that's Christianity as science, and so on. Well, what does it mean? You see, it can mean many things. So I tried to epitomize it in terms which are more exact for this special case of the prophet. Now you see, if we go again over the one, I call it the 1, 2, 3, 4, just to take away once for a week, that constantly recurring word as the word as Christ, Christianity as the word, science as the word, and so on. You can see that the first triad as the monopotency of God, good, is a sense of the word. See, the power of the word. That it has a sense of the word, though it is under the roof of the Christ. Never forget that. And the second one, the reformatory power. See, you know, that's the Christ. Christ that reforms, it's the Savior that comes and reforms, comes to mortals to restore, to reform him, and so on. And when you come to the rest, I don't mind it. Every time I start a big lecture, I have always a thunderstorm. But it isn't the anger of the Lord. Now, there you have the restoration of the idea. You see, fundamentally, it is Christ, because it's under the roof. The Christ restores, you see, but in its finer shading, it has a touch of Christianity. See, the idea that is freed from everything which doesn't belong to it. And fourth, you have the operation of the idea in its principle. Well, that again, fundamentally, is the Christ, but that's the roof. But it has a shade of signs in it, because the idea is working in its principle. So you can see that though I put other terms instead of word, Christ, Christianity, and signs, that those epitomes have the touch of the word Christ, Christianity, and signs. Now, before I go to the other ones, we make a break.